Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CCW podcast. This is Al.
Hey, everyone, it's Dagny.
Welcome to episode 15. We're going to call this one Women's Carry Issues. And before we get started, the reason we wanted to do this podcast is because Dagny got some great news. It's been a few weeks now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago this past Friday.
What happened?
I got my permit in the mail. Our state's now issuing the permits through the mail. And got home from work, and there it was, waiting in the mailbox.
Yeah, they went from a laminated style where they just take a little flimsy piece of cardstock or whatever and laminate it, and now it looks more like a driver's license. I'm kind of jealous. She got a really sharp-looking permit now. But I guess the old schoolers will sort of be partial to that old laminate style and say, hey, you know, these are the old schoolers, and that's kind of cool too. But
yeah, especially if the price goes up, right?
Oh, exactly. So you want to talk a little bit about your carrying experience? Well, let's start back here. Did you carry at all, or have you carried at all in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I've been carrying with the two holsters that I do have and trying to get comfortable. I'm really nervous about the concealability and if I'm printing, or I don't even know if you'd call it printing. It just looks like I have a tumor is what I keep telling Al. I feel like I look like I have a big bulge. It's not even just printing in my mind, but it's probably more exaggerated in my mind than what it looks like to other people, just because I know what I'm trying to conceal.
Right, right. I think that I've read some forums that say if you're looking down at yourself, you can kind of notice the bump a lot more than anyone who's looking at you from the side, which is what most people will be looking at you from. It is printing, though. I mean, anything that you say is a bulge or anything. But so you've carried, you know, I've kind of jokingly said, you know, you haven't been carrying every day, so instead of Semper Potare, we should call you Sometimes Potare.
Yeah, he's been giving me some slack.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, good-natured ribbing, but, yeah, I mean, you've been carrying as much as you possibly can, and I'm very happy to see that, but you want to give the audience a reminder of what your carrying holster situation is?
Sure. The weapon I have is the Carr P380, and we just looked up on the website, and I measured myself. Its slide is 3/4 of an inch wide, just to give you a feel for how big it is that I'm trying to conceal. And that's the grips and everything. There's no variation in the width of the gun or, you know, however I'm trying to express it. The slide width is the width of the entire gun frame. And then the two holsters I have is the DeSantis Summer Heat and the Galco Ultra. Which one is it, Al?
The Tuck and Go. You got the Tuck and Go.
The Tuck and Go. The insert that came with it has like three different holster types listed on it.
Yeah, Galco's instruction manual, I guess to save money, groups the Ultimate Second Amendment holster, the Ultra Deep Cover holster, and the Tuck and Go under the same instruction manual. I think it's just because they function the same way, even though they're made a little bit differently. But Tuck and Go seems to be the only one that we could find that that Galco makes for the Carr P380 in that appendix position, and I think at first that's the position you wanted to try out. Or at least that I wanted you to try out.
Yeah, I'll definitely is partial to that position for carry. And ordered these two holsters online. We honestly had a hard time when we were shopping around for holsters in anticipation of me getting my permit. We had a really hard time finding anything that was designed for this particular model gun in stores. I mean, online you can find just about anything, but the only thing we ended up finding in stores at all that I'm aware of for the P380 was like the soft, I don't know if it's neoprene or what, but the sticky holsters that are more designed for pocket carry. And obviously, my pants and pockets and things like that just don't accommodate the size of this weapon or that holster or anything like that. So,
right, and those pocket ones actually are just made for small, medium, large. I think they're not even brand specific most of the time, it seems. But we haven't found any of those pocket ones that said, you know, hey, this is for a car. We've seen some that say for the Ruger LCP, for the Kel-Tec P380, and some other different firearms. But not a lot of stuff out there, at least in our local gun stores. And even some that we found down south, it was hard to find some car P380 specific holsters.
Right. I think that we tried a couple holsters at that Open Range place while we were on vacation, and they had a pretty good selection too, and nothing, and just those sticky holsters, which I'm sure we'll get one and at some point if I want to carry in a coat pocket in the winter or something instead of on my person directly on my waistband or whatever. But I guess I'll start by saying my initial thoughts, and I think Al's too, was that the DeSantis is a really substantial, it's pretty leather. I don't know much about leather work or anything, but it's really...
There seems to be a higher level of craftsmanship. You can see some visible stitching in there, and the molding or the form fitting, it just fits to me a lot more snug. There's a sweat guard like we talked about before on another episode, and there's also, it just seems quite a bit thicker.
Which, after I started trying to carry, became an issue for me. But initially just receiving it, the gun seemed to slide into it easier. You had to kind of work it into the Galco a little bit more. But not loose, like the DeSantis doesn't have a problem with the gun falling out if I were to turn it upside down. The clip on the DeSantis is the metal. Do you know what they're called, Al? It's the really tight metal clip, and I don't know if the belt's designed to go behind the metal, honestly, or if it's designed to have the belt go over the clip. But I actually, the couple days that I tried the DeSantis, I just put the clip on, and I think a couple of the days I didn't even wear a belt. The clip is so tight that I had no issue, no fear of the holster or the gun coming off of me. But it made a really big, it had a big printing issue, much more than the Galco. So I switched to the Galco for, I guess, maybe the last week. Mm-hmm. I tried to do like 50-50 before we did this podcast to, you know, give them each a fair shot here. No pun intended.
Well, you want to talk maybe a little bit about pros and cons? I think we talked, a little bit about the holster differences. The tuck and go seems to be a sort of what we'd call an economy version of holster. It's a little minimalistic, not much to it, but it functions pretty well, and as a result, it's very thin. The DeSantis had a lot more construction work into it, I think, and therefore, you're going to pay a little bit more. I think the price was a little bit more expensive for the DeSantis, and you can kind of tell just looking at it.
And I believe when we ordered, I think I ordered through Amazon, and it was a third-party vendor that supplied both items, the same third party. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was the DeSantis that was on back order. I had to wait a couple of weeks. The Galco was already. And the DeSantis, it's really nice. I'm kind of heartsick that it's not working as well as I had hoped. But,
well, you want to talk maybe about, the position, you know, I know that some of the ladies that we listen to on the Pro Arms Network or Pro Arms podcast, carry in the appendix position. And you know, I like the appendix position too, but you perhaps, like and dislike the position.
I do. It's actually pretty comfortable when I sit. It's not bad. I haven't had an issue. It's partially, I'm sure, because the P380 is pretty small. I could never carry, you know, like the Glock 19. We were messing around the other day, and I tried on a different holster of Al's on the belt. It actually attaches to the belt. And I put it on, and I was just trying to see, and it was, like, stabbing me, and I don't even think I could sit down with that on. So, I mean, it's clearly, you know, very specific to the gun you're going to have. And the Pro Arms ladies have a couple of really great episodes that go into the whole system that you need to have in place to carry. And it includes the weapon itself, the holster, the belt, and, what's the fourth thing?
Say that again.
The cover.
The garment.
Yeah, the cover garment. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they do go into it, and for men and women, it's a really just good, basic, fundamental, you know, you can't just do the holster and think you've got it. Especially for ladies, they go into the importance of having a contoured belt because we have curves. A lot of things you don't think about. They touch on the issue of the different cuts of pants, and I strongly believe that that's one of my biggest problems with being able to conceal effectively right now, is that a lot of my jeans are the lower rise and not sitting at my natural waist. That waistband is hitting right at almost the fullest part of my hips. And then to add the weapon right at that point too, it's just very noticeable. And to have some more natural waisted or higher waisted pants, I think a lot of the issues would evaporate.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that because you have sort of the style of jeans these days for ladies, there's lower rise, so the waistband of the jeans are actually quite a bit lower than they normally would be on the traditional jeans.
Right, and I guess I should be specific. Your natural waist is at your belly button. It's that smallest part of your body between your hips and in your upper chest.
For some of us.
Right. Well, yeah. That's your natural waist, no matter how big you are or how small you are.
Yeah.
And with women with the hips, you know, the low-rise jeans, another issue that I have noticed, and this goes more towards the Second Amendment, or no, the tuck-and-go, the Galco holster, the lower-rise jeans dip a little bit more in the front just by design, and in appendix position I have to place the holsters in between the button, like the fly of the jeans, and that first belt loop on my right, on the side I carry. So it goes in between there, right in front of that belt loop. If I put it on the far side of the belt loop, it is riding right on my hip bone and is really uncomfortable. It's not carryable there. And I noticed on the Galco insert that they show it. They don't say where to place it, aside from it's, you know, designed for appendix, but there are some subtleties that I've gleaned, and they show it being placed behind the belt loop. And I can't do that with my build, with the cut of jeans I have. And the result is, after a while, the weight of the weapon, even with a belt on over it, it starts to slide closer to the fly. And then the barrel of the weapon starts to print through the jeans in a little bit awkward location. So I'm like always trying to readjust and tilt it so that it looks like I just have chapstick in my pocket or something.
And it's a difficult holster to cant because it's a straight drop cant. On these two, they don't have any adjustable cant to them. We're learning that maybe if she wants to cant it, that we get some of the many different holsters that come with that cant or adjustable to move it around like that. So you can do that. Because the ones that we have and the ones that I own are just all straight drop, and which are really good for the appendix position, but maybe not so much for other position.
And I think, again, it just kind of goes back to, if I get some jeans that are more natural waisted or higher waisted, a lot of this I can report back and say that it's not an issue. And the pants and the fit and everything, the Pro Arms ladies also discussed, you know, watch where the belt loops are. And my jeans, I don't think, have abnormal belt loop placement, but sometimes loops are wider or in odd places. And so you just need to kind of have all your gear with you when you go to shop for pants. And I'm finding really that my pants are as important, if not more important, as a cover garment than the shirt or blouse that goes actually over the top of the weapon to cover it. I don't know. Al, have you had that experience at all?
Well, it's really challenging. With my jeans, it's pretty easy. I mean, my jeans are, you know, guy style, and that they're not very tight around the waist as it is for me. They're kind of all kind of loose. So if I wear a holster with my belt, and I seem to be pretty comfortable with it, except for some pairs of jeans, which I kind of just keep out of the rotation if I know I'm going to carry, which I'm carrying all the time, Semper Petare. And, well, for dressing up, I have Dockers and sweatsuit pants, and those actually seem to fit quite well, because what I end up doing is there's that extra set of button that you put on at the waist after you cinch it. There's that extra button area to the right of you, almost right where you're going to put the holster, and that's what I end up clipping the clip to, and actually having that secure button there actually secures the holster enough, and then I put the belt over it. I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but you guys out there who have dress clothes know what I'm talking about. That second button to the right.
It's like the extended tab.
Yeah. Closure. Mm-hmm. And I just put the holster right in there as if that's a little belt system of its own. And then I come with the belt right over it. So I got a kind of a double situation where even if I lost that belt or the belt came undone, that little second closure would keep the holster in for me. So in some ways, I actually enjoy wearing dress pants if I'm going to be carrying. So, so far I've been very lucky in the ways I carry. I mean, I guess because I started in a position where it kind of hurt me. Nowadays, that does a little discomfort doesn't even bug me at all. So, it's pretty cool.
The other thing, I guess, the packaging on the DeSantis came with kind of a warning about break-in period and the leather work and things like that, maintenance and how to not exactly clean it, but just restore it and such things. And then the Galco one came, it had that insert, which I mentioned before, kind of mentions three of their different holsters, and the instructions are the same for all of them. But on the packaging, the hard plastic shell packaging, it does have a label that says the specific model, that it's for the right-handed, you know, the product number and everything. But it also has a little circular diagram on there under the barcode that shows, like, an aerial view looking down at a person's head and shoulders. And so if you're facing straight ahead, that's 12 o'clock. It shows you on the clock in shaded areas where the holster is designed to be carried. So they've got it between 10 and 11, and then all the way from 1 until 4. And I did try the one day to wear at like a 3:30 position because I've been hearing that that's a good spot. It's pretty concealable and whatnot. And it was pretty concealable, and I felt a lot more comfortable with not having... In theory, I felt a lot more comfortable not having to worry about how it would print in the front, but it's one of those things that it might have just been more comfortable because I could forget about it because I wasn't looking down at it. The other issue...
Out of sight, out of mind, kind of. Well, the 3:30 position we should explain is where?
It's just behind my right hip.
Yep.
And the other issue that I ran into is that to sit with the holster and the gun in that position, I can't sit back in a chair because it pushes into me really pretty good. So it's definitely a good option for me, maybe, you know, if I'm going to be standing most of the time.
Right. So you might mention that Gail Pepin and her guest Kathy Jackson on Pro Arms were talking about holsters, and there were four different categories of different of a carrying system. Holsters was just one of them, right? There was, what, the gun?
The weapon itself, which is, you know, whatever your carry weapon is. I mean, that's a whole other podcast of how to choose the weapon you're going to carry, and probably a lot of us have multiples. I'm not quite there yet, but if I'm going to have to start investing in a lot of other holsters, I'm entertaining the idea of wanting to upgrade to a 9, but...
That's another episode. That's going to be something to look forward to, too.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Then the holster, and I mean, the word of advice was you get holsters that are designed for your model weapon. You don't get one of those one size fits all or small, medium, large. I mean, for pocket carry or something like that, it makes a little bit more sense. You don't need something quite so structured.
That's more the exception rather than the rule. The rule is get a holster that was built for your particular firearm.
Exactly. And I think that the whole purpose of the system, when you look at all of the four elements in coordination, is that it's designed for having you hit all the points you need to carry on your body. And those sticky holsters are more designed for kind of arguably off body, if you're going to have it in a coat pocket or something like that, which is what I would use it for. It's just the considerations aren't quite the same. I'm not going to need to worry about a belt if I'm carrying in a pocket of any kind.
Right.
So
so it's weapon, holster. What are the other two categories?
Belt and cover garments. And the belt, for men, I guess it's not so much of a mystery. For women, you want the contoured belt. And I've been looking for belts. I have one leather belt, and it's not... I should say I have one leather belt that's wide enough to actually do the job of holding the holster. I have a lot of skinny belts because they're, I guess, what's more trendy right now. Mm-hmm. And they don't work for this at all.
I know you mentioned contoured belts, and I didn't really know what that was before you mentioned it to me. Can you describe what that is?
Sure. So if you just lay your average belt out on the table, it's going to be a straight line. And for women's belts... And that's how they're typically sold, but you'll notice if you pull a woman's belt out, the one I've been wearing now to carry, when you lay it out flat, it has a nice curve to it. The tips are the high points, and it makes like a U when you lay it flat, and it's because of our curves. And so if you buy one that's already got that curve to it, it's much more comfortable. It's designed to move with you and hold things where they should be. I looked on Amazon. I was thinking, you know, what are my options? And a couple of regular, like, retail stores, fashion kind of stores, sell contour belts. I have my suspicions that they wouldn't be sturdy enough anyway, even though they are the contour cut. And Galco has quite a few. So then the issue becomes, you know, at that point you move on to the cover garments, and I would need to know what pants I'm wearing it with to know what size belt to order, because, you know, my natural waist is significantly smaller than my hips, and to wear the low-rise jeans, if that's going to continue to be a way that I do carry, you know, in those pants, I need, you know, at least probably one size up in belt, or, you know, add extra holes to existing.
Right. Moving back to the belt, I know that when I first started doing research on this stuff, they said don't wear your dress pant belt. Get a belt that's built to hold a gun. Get a gun... a gun leather belt that can carry holsters, and it was built for that purpose, so it's very, you know, reinforced. I've been very happy with some of the 511 tactical instructor belts. I think that's what they're called. They have a really substantial metal buckle and are basically fastened via Velcro, so you can literally adjust it as you know, in smallest increments as possible. And that's really great for me because my weight seems to fluctuate daily. And those belts have been great. I'm sure they make them for females. Have you done any research?
I haven't done any research.
We got to do that for you.
Yeah, it would be good. I think I'd still have the issue of, you know, if they make that for women, I could probably wear a smaller size than a man's. The issue would then be if it will fit in the height of the belt loops on my clothing. Because I know your belts that you have would be way too tall for the loops on my pants.
Yeah, I have a 1 1/4 inch and then 1 1/2 inch. And the 1 1/2 inch belt, the thickness of it, the tallness of it, I guess, the height is 1 1/2 inches. And that's pretty challenging to find belts that match that height. I think I'm not saying that right, cord measurement. But it's a bit thicker than a normal belt width. It fits about 80% of my clothes. The 1 1/4 inch one fits everything, but that 1 1/2 inch, actually, I have several pairs of pants that it will not work with, but that's just knowing your carrying systems, I guess. And it would really surprise me in this day and age that there aren't women's gun belt holster or belts specifically made for women to carry. I mean, I'm sure maybe you should shoot one of the ladies at Pro Arms an email or something.
Yeah, they seem pretty open, and they talk about when you go shopping for the holster or the belt to, you know, tell them, you know, what are you doing when you're carrying? Are you sitting? Are you standing? You know, are you on your feet or not? All of these different things. And your body type. I mean, a lot of people, especially, I mean, no offense, but if it's men selling the goods, you know, you have even less of a likelihood of running into someone who's going to be able to make a knowledgeable recommendation. You know, even if they're well-meaning, they're
right,
just not going to understand the challenges.
It seems like to me, even with all the women getting interested in shooting sports and shooting and self-defense, and it seems like the number is only growing by the day, that gun makers and holster makers are choosing to go the cutesy route than actually, you know, if they throw a color like pink onto a gun that was made for a guy, that doesn't suddenly make it female to me.
Yeah, if you could see me, I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, and then, well, you put polka dots on a holster or something, and then they go, okay, that's the female version. I think that's a terrible marketing. Some products have to be made for women, and I think made by women maybe even, and not just from the production end, but from, design and manufacturing and discussing, what would make a holster fit a woman's body. I mean, I hope these types of discussions are being made and we're not aware of it. But it just seems to me like a lot of this stuff is, hey, this is for a guy, but hey, we'll make it and market it to women by doing X, Y, and Z. And I think this design strategy should be, our market is women, and this is X percentage of our market. How do we tailor our products for that from the beginning, And I guess it's easier said than done, obviously, from a cost perspective. But in the long term, I think women are going to be demanding, certain belts made for them, certain holsters made for them, certain guns made for them, and the clothing that surrounds it, too. So
I think from listening to the Pro Arms, it seems that a lot of the work that the women need ends up being custom work, or they'll pick out a holster but then have modifications done, lengthen this, shorten that, if they want the sweat guard or something. I mean, it's custom work, it's going to cost more, but these are all investment pieces, or at least they should be. So, I mean, you've got to know where your budget is, and,
Yeah, it seems like with their network, they could probably have the pick of the litter in terms of who would work on their stuff, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, still talking about the holsters, the DeSantis is not tuckable, which is another benefit of the Galco. I layered when I wore the Galco in the latter part of these last 2 weeks, and I wore like a white kind of undershirt tank top under like an Oxford blouse that was not tucked in, which I have to say was a really effective concealment garment, because the Oxford shirt has so much body and structure to itself that it didn't want to hug my curves as much as, cotton or jersey or other things would. And it didn't look sloppy the way just like a sweatshirt would or something. Mm-hmm. But under that, in case it rode up or the bottom of the tails where the last button was were to flop open and somehow something would be visible, I took the white tank top and I tucked it with the tuck and go. And, when I got home from work and took the Oxford shirt off and showed Al, he didn't know what I was pointing at. I was like, how is it? I'm like all nervous and excited because I'm still getting used to carrying. And he's like, what? He didn't know that I had, the weapon on. So that was
I knew after she told me, and then I could see it, but my eyes just didn't see it when she was just like, hey, look. And should we perhaps, explain to our listeners tuckable real quick? What does that mean?
Sure. The holster, it's got the it's plastic tab that goes over your waistband.
Their J hook on the Galco.
And
there's a gap.
There's a gap between the plastic way down to where it attaches to the leather. It's a couple inches. And you can tuck in between the leather and the plastic there. And then, all you've got is that inch and a quarter maybe of the J hook that sticks outside of the pants, but then the belt covers the bulk of that, and you just have maybe a quarter of an inch at the bottom of the tab that kind of comes and flips up over the bottom of your belt to hold everything in place, and that's all you see.
Right. So for those people who need to dress up and wear, their dress shirts tucked in, the Galco tuck and go is a possible solution to that. You could actually tuck in the shirt material in between that V from the J hook and the holster itself, the leather part, and you just tuck your clothes in there so that the only thing visible would be that little tab. And it's black, so if you wear a black belt from afar, you probably won't be able to tell. And just from society's aversion to looking at people's waist areas, I think most people probably wouldn't notice unless they're looking for it. And the way I am and the way you are, we're looking for it more and more now, so we're probably staring at people's waists a lot more than we used to. But Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that you mention how the Galco Tuck and Go is more conducive to wearing your more formal wear for men. For women, I think it's the opposite. My comment was, why can't this Galco have the metal tab that's really snug? Because most women's dress slacks do not have belt loops at all. And the thing with the DeSantis is that metal clasp that grips is really wide. So if you're not wearing black pants, it's going to be really noticeable.
Mm-hmm. It's a big 1-inch, like, money clip looking thing.
Yep, that's exactly what it looks like.
And it's black, and it's much more snug in the fact that you don't even need a belt to secure it.
I mean, I have a hard time even getting it pried open enough to get it to slide over my thin dress pants.
Yeah.
Let alone with the jeans, and then I haven't even put it on with a belt. I need to do research, honestly. I'm not sure. Al thinks that the belt would go behind the clip, and I just can't imagine being able to pull it open enough to get the belt behind.
Yeah, I think the more and more I think about what I said, I think I'm wrong there. I think you don't need to put the belt over it. Like you said, it's meant to fit very snugly against you, and there's no room for a belt there, but I can see that the belt probably does go over it, because that way it would actually hide much of that money clip shape.
I'm trying to remember, do you remember when I carried with the DeSantis, the sweat guard is great and it helps keep the gun away from my body, but as I recall from sitting down with the DeSantis, the sweat guard has a little bit of a pointed tip to it, and mm-hmm. I believe that started to dig into my ribs if I didn't have really perfect posture.
Yeah, it did dig into your ribs, and it left a mark on your skin more than the Galco did, that's for sure. It's a very good idea, but it almost is, the sweat guard is almost too high, and it's too pointed. It could have been rounded for sure. It comes to an almost rounded dagger type point. I mean, nothing that's going to draw blood, but definitely something that could poke you.
I mean, it's a really sleek holster, and I still like it. It's they each have their place. The sweat guard on the DeSantis, when I have the gun holstered, extends a good quarter to a half of an inch beyond the back of the slide of the gun. So, I mean, it's pretty substantial, and it's nice. I mean, it feels really good against my skin, and if I'm understanding correctly from the Pro Arms ladies, it's also kind of referred to as a wedge. And I could have this all wrong, but when they were describing it, I thought that's this holster. And it is designed with that thicker leather specifically there to kind of guide the holster away from the woman's body because of her curves so that it doesn't dig in to her. But I think because I was carrying on lower rise pants again, I mean, I'm creating more issues.
Yeah. Well, it also seems like you mentioned that they had custom work done. That would be probably one of the areas you'd probably want rounded down and taken down a little bit, is that sweat guard top.
In comparison, the Galco Tuck and Go holster, it ends, the top of the holster is the same all the way around, front and back. It's just squared off. And it ends right in front of the back sights on the gun. So it leaves a good, like, half of an inch of the slide exposed.
Yeah.
So no, much shorter.
No sweat guard.
No.
And barely covers the trigger guard, which is my kind of issue with it. It just seems to, you almost can see a little bit of air space from the rear of the trigger guard to where the holster ends. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make me very comfortable, but.
And actually, we did have a listener send us a story about a person who had a similar holster. It's made of suede, by the way. The DeSantis is a harder, I don't know if it's called bonded leather or what, but the Galco is a suede, and so it's thinner leather and it's suede. And some man was getting into his car and his gun discharged, and he had no idea what happened, and from his personal account, the holster had gotten soft, and when he bent his leg to get into his car, the holster engaged the trigger.
Yeah, it bent inwards a little bit, and when he shoved it in, the inward bend of the leather holster acted as a little trigger finger and engaged the trigger and shot. So
yeah, he was lucky. I mean, he didn't get injured too bad. The car has a hole.
Our listener was saying, oh, you have Galco holsters, so, you know, we just thought that you might want to look at this, and very much appreciated that, of course. I think that the ones that I have are the ultimate Second Amendment ones, and they seem to have some sort of protective coating along the edge that kind of keeps it hard. And so as it gets worked in, it doesn't actually loosen up and lose its edge, its hard edge. Time will only tell, of course. I've just been hitting my year mark on carrying, if you guys can believe it. I sure can't. But yeah, in the year that I've had all these different types of holsters and stuff, I haven't noticed it working loose like that, so to the point where it could bend when I try to re-engage my holster and try to put the gun back into the holster. But that's definitely something we're going to keep our eyes on, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So anything, I think that we discussed these, the you're carrying these first 2 weeks here. We mentioned the possibility of another gun for you. We probably would make that into a future episode. But there's a lot of exciting firearms coming out that might be a good viable option for you. I know Gail Pepin likes to use the Glock 26, which as a Glock fanboy of sorts, it's kind of an interesting selection for me, for you to choose for me. I hope that works out. There's also the M&P Shield, which is a new firearm that Smith & Wesson just put out. And not giving up on Smith, so that's a possibility too. And it's quite a bit affordable. $400 range is what I'm hearing. So,
but it's hard to get your hands on is also what we're hearing.
That's what we're hearing from secondhand information. They're saying that most of the gun stores out here, if they do get it, they're keeping it for 24 hours before they're sold. So they're not. That's pretty par for the course, I think, in terms of any new hot firearm, at least in its initial production runs. So what else could we talk about?
Well, we've mentioned these people, and I don't know, probably a lot of our listeners also listen to Pro Arms, but Gail Pepin is Masayoub's
girlfriend,
I guess, and Kathy Jackson is the woman of Cornered Cat, which is a great website. I haven't admittedly gone through that website nearly enough, and I've been trying to get my hands on her book, which I believe she adapted from the website. So the website probably has everything I'd need, but I've like books. I would like to get my hands on the book.
Yeah.
But very thorough. She teaches at the Seattle Firearms Academy, I believe, and I was on her site this morning or last night and saw that she's actually going to be touring and doing maybe a half a dozen live trainings across the country. Nothing real close to us. Kind of disappointed. But that's pretty cool. So if our listeners are, you know, interested in learning more about the whole women's carry issue, there's some great resources out there, and we don't want to rehash their content, but some of it was just too good to not mention because I've relied on it so heavily and coming to carry myself and learning why things aren't working for me.
Yeah, and it's a pretty interesting lesson, too, because one of the resources that we use a lot is our library, and I remember getting you Cornered Cat maybe 6-7 months ago, and it just sat there. You didn't read it.
Well, yeah.
And then now you're begging for it, and we might actually have to buy it, but it's one of those things that is a part of human psychology, I think. It doesn't become an issue until it becomes an issue, right? I mean,
yeah, and even then, I think I would have read it if I had thought that I was going to carry, but at that point, and you were, 6 or 7 months ago, you hadn't been carrying that long.
Mm-hmm.
So,
6 or 7 months ago, I just had, one gun and no podcast and, reading everything I could about it and everything, but it was hard to kind of pull you into the enthusiasm until you had a stake in the fight and decided that, hey, you know, this is something that you wanted to do. And then by that point, Cornered Cat's a hard book to come by. It's a very popular book, and but if you know, to our listeners out there, use the library. I mean, it's an incredible resource, and through that, I've been able to read a lot of materials that I think I otherwise wouldn't be able to find.
Yeah, so. I've actually I think most states have it, like an interlibrary loan system. So if your own library doesn't have something, you can request it from any other library in the state, and they'll fulfill the order. And, you know, with the post office and things the way it is, and, you know, budget cuts for most states, we've noticed significant increases in the amount of time it takes to receive the materials, but they always come, and it's wonderful. I've actually got Gila Hayes's Personal Defense for Women coming via our state's interlibrary loan program.
Yeah, and Gila Hayes, I don't know if that, I'm saying her first name right, she's out of the Seattle, that Washington Academy as well, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's she's her on a and couple Marty of, Hayes, yeah.
She's in a couple of these
same place as Kathy Jackson.
I'll mention there's three ProArms podcast episodes that are all women talking about, you know, topics that are really on point. Episode 8, episode 34, and episode 64. And 8 and 34 are bread and butter. I've listened to them probably 3 or 4 times a piece in the last 2 weeks at work and at home, referencing them, trying to pinpoint, you know, okay, my clothing needs to change, I need a different belt, okay, this is working, this isn't, and just really, really valuable information. Episode 8 focuses more in on how to get into the mindset of carrying and kind of the threshold questions, and I don't want to go into it, and I don't want to cover Kathy's material for her, but episode 8 is wonderful. It just, it breaks down, you know, It's a personal choice, and this is the process. This is the order you go in. You can't force someone to come to a conclusion that they're not comfortable with, and if they try, a lot of times there will just be that lingering discomfort, and it's because they haven't answered, you know, deeply moral questions. It's not even about carrying a gun at that point. It's about deeper issues.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think we've noticed in this carrying lifestyle is that for guys, I think it's easier to come to that philosophical conclusion that, yeah, I need to carry, and here's why. I mean, we, as men, speaking for the entire gender, if I may, we don't really appreciate it long enough. We kind of go from that, hey, I think I'm interested in carrying, to, hey, I'm carrying. Whereas with ladies, it seems to me, from what I'm hearing from you and from what I'm hearing from you through ProArms podcasts, it is a decision that of ethical weight and of moral weight and of, hey, can I take a life? And coming to that conclusion first before you say, okay, let me look at what this carrying is all about. It seems to me that it's a much more internal struggle to get to that point.
Yeah, you're kind of hitting on some of the stuff they talk about directly in those podcasts. And when I was re-listening to this stuff, I had to chuckle to myself because they were stating and kind of reaffirming stuff that I said in my small little podcast, my backstory, because it is the experience of, you know, Al decided to carry and I wasn't going to be carrying. And so the whole concept was still a little foreign to me, even though I was comfortable with him carrying and having the gun in the house. And it's kind of like I skipped steps A, B, and C, and we're at D, and, you know, I'm having to confront the idea of having crime that would necessitate having the firearm, and I haven't really thought about those circumstances to reach the conclusion that we should have the firearm. So it was kind of out of order, which you know, led to the discomfort that I had for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we have a lot of growing listeners, and I gotta believe that, you know, believe it or not, we haven't had any female emails yet. You know, we've had quite a bit of men telling us, hey, the women in their lives are interested or aren't interested, and tell us it that way. But we have no real way of gauging how many women out there are actually thinking of doing it and are listening themselves. But one of the things that I would find interesting is to hear where they're at and if they're still behind that struggle of, hey, can I really do this? Can I really take someone's life if I need to? And I think there are probably some very thoughtful men out there who are struggling with that as well. And to that end, you know, I just, you know, obviously you have to make that decision on your own and come to that conclusion on your own. But if you were to tell me a year ago when I first got my permit that, Dagny would be carrying a year later, I would probably doubt it a little bit. But, you know, she came to the conclusion on her own, and good for her. And we're still finalizing the four things that people need to have a successful carry system. But, you know, the only way to perfect it is to try it and to keep working through errors and what works for her and what doesn't. And obviously, what works for me is not ideal for her. And we definitely...
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. That's something that you just brought up to my mind that I knew I wanted to mention, is that I think it's important for women to not go shopping thinking that they're a problem and they're, you know, something to overcome. As so much of the stuff is designed for men and whatnot. You know, we have curves and a lot of the carry options aren't going to work, or they're not going to work the same, but that doesn't make it a problem or a negative, because there are various carry options that become options for us that men don't have. And to say that it's harder or, you know, it's different. It's just different. It's not worse. It's not inferior or anything like that. And I think that that's an important mindset to have. I am still interested in getting an ankle holster, particularly with my experiences with both of the appendix holsters I have. I think it's a very viable option. And probably cheaper than buying all new pants.
Right.
And, you know, Al has mentioned before, I think, flashbang holsters. I think the concept of where it's concealed is a good idea. I don't like the idea of how it attaches to the body. And it's something that attaches to the center portion of a woman's bra. And I just think that that could cause...
It's an interesting... idea. I really like the idea of it, just because I should word this carefully.
Yeah, don't say because it's hot.
No, it's because the women's location has a lot of airspace potentially there.
Yeah, I can say it probably without getting the looks from our listeners that we can't even see. There's anatomically, there's space there. Mm-hmm. I mean, more for some women than others, but you know, the clothing is going to have a natural drop from that fullest point of your chest.
Yeah. I mean, you, one of the things you asked me initially was like, where can I hide it? And then, you know, that flashbang holster at least said, oh, well, here's some space, you know, and it's just space that goes unused otherwise, really.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be, for a woman, you have to be wearing something skin tight for it to hit you really snugly right under your bust line. So, you know, obviously if I ever try that, I'll tactfully describe it. But
on that thing that you mentioned about women not feeling like they're, you know, trouble or that they're, you know, a pain when they go to a gun store, if your local gun store makes you feel that way, and... Today, now more than ever, if the gun stores are not catering to women, they're being very foolish, I think. So if you ever go to a gun store and feel like you're being treated like, oh, you know, this is a good old boy shop and we don't have time for you women folk, you know, get out of there, because there's got to be other places around you. And if not, go online and find it that way. That's what we've ended up having to do. I mean, not that our gun stores aren't good. It's just they don't have a lot of holster product. And finding good holsters for you has been sort of an online hunt rather than, oh, we can go to our local gun store and try on three or four holsters. But, you know, the gun stores around us have been really very eager to help women and with women's issues. It just seems to be the, you know, oh, here's a holster for a guy, try that one on, you know, and it hasn't necessarily been like, oh, well, we know exactly what we do for women, and this is how we do it yet. And I think that that's something that we're going to see coming soon. People will know how to custom tailor their approach to a woman rather than a guy in terms of how to set them up with a carry system.
I think it would be the most awesome thing ever to be able to have a website with pictures, and, you know, you can go on different clothing stores websites and you answer questions about your body type, and then it'll recommend the cut of pants for you. Mm-hmm. I wish that there was a site, you know, that said, you know, what cut of pants do you wear, what is your body type, what weapon do you have, and then give you, you know, a system that might work.
Right.
To kind of take the guesswork and trial and error out of it. There's nothing wrong with the trial and error, but it is really intimidating. I mean, men are very straight, and it's, you know, what works for one will work for many. And for women, I think there's a lot more variance there. It's much more personal and customized in a sense.
Yeah, I think that I would be, we're giving a lot of the companies out there some good ideas. I think that that would be kind of neat. You know, you select your body type, you select your measurements, you select the type of clothing you like to wear. And then from there, holster recommendations are made and maybe show you, like you said, pictures on how it looks on real women and how they conceal it every day. That would be quite a bit useful, I think. For guys, I know the appendix position can get very challenging if you are well-nourished in the belly area. So I'm fighting a fight there because, you know, I'm a little bit more well-nourished than I used to be, so... the appendix position is very comfortable for me, but if I gained maybe 10, 15 more pounds, I think that I might have to move it behind my hip.
Is there any reason you haven't tried it behind your hip?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I like having it in front of me. I don't know why. I just like... I don't like wondering if it's sticking out behind me yet, you know. I just haven't gotten comfortable with the idea. For me, it's been appendix since day one, and it's what I've stuck with since day one. And it's just, it could be like the whole, you know, 1911 Glock thing. It's just a matter of time before I evolve. But for now, knowing it's in front of me and knowing it's there is much more reassuring to me than kind of... leaving it behind me and not being able to keep tabs on it, so to speak. It's just comfortable for me, too, just the way, I don't know, I walk or, you know, move or sit or stuff like that. I think it's just always knowing it's right in front of me and knowing that I can control it from that position is paramount to me, I guess. But it does also just, it fits there for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe someday we'll both try different...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, to give you guys an update, I'm going to be doing some training in the summer, and the place that I'm going to be doing it at won't let me carry it in appendix and draw from there, so I'm going to have to go 330 at least, or behind the hip or at the hip or do something like that.
Don't they also require outside the waist, like for the training itself? You can't even carry inside the waistband.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. They recommend it outside the waistband. That's why I got it. That's why I got a holster that's outside the waistband. So this Glock Sport Combat holster that I'm going to keep it around 330, I think. So I'm going to be forced to learn how to draw from that position. And, you know, it's not uncomfortable for me in any sense. It's just that it's probably not how I would carry every day, you know, particularly outside the waistband, you know.
Yeah, not for Al.
Yeah, not for me yet, but, you know, who knows? And by episode 30, I might be the biggest proponent of 330 carry. And, you know, I know it's very popular, and it's probably the most popular position to carry in, so I definitely wouldn't denigrate it at all as a carry option. It's probably the best for a lot of people. But we're pushing at almost an hour episode here, and I'm pretty surprised. You know, I'm always surprised at how much we can come up with to talk about. But today's podcast was about women's carry issues, and we'll point you guys to our ever-improving blog, thanks to Dagny, ccwpodcast.blogspot.com.
I believe it's CCW. Is it show?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's ccwshow.blogspot.com. Someone took CCW podcast. How dare they? No, actually, I think it's a church, so I think that's all right. We're fine with that, actually. We're very fine with that. And...
Yeah, what I'll else? Be putting up...
episode notes.
Yeah, notes, links to some of the books we've mentioned, the Pro Arms podcast I mentioned, maybe the holsters, if anyone is interested, so they can find those easily.
And if you found our podcast and you're new to this type of genre of podcast, guns, carrying, CCW, whatnot, you've heard us mention Pro Arms podcast. That is the absolute best podcast on... guns and carrying and the lifestyle and their access to some of the authorities and some of the stories that you'll hear will change your life. And the fact that they put it up for free on podcast form is just an incredible resource. And you guys are doing yourself a disservice if you haven't listened to every episode. And if you haven't listened to every episode 10 times like I have, which, I don't know, some of these episodes get me through work every day, so.
Well, I don't know that you enjoy the policy as much. I eat the policy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not for me.
They cover the Gun Rights Policy Conference every year, and they put those up as podcasts, which is, if you're into that, that's awesome.
Well, they don't even count those as episodes because they don't follow the numbered episode format, so they understand that, you know, that doesn't count. That's just gravy.
Right, yeah, that doesn't do it for everybody, but I enjoy that stuff too, so.
Yeah, you might find us at one of those policies, thanks to Dagny. She probably wants to go to one or two of those before, too long here.
Speaking of policy, was there a law change you wanted to mention or news story?
There was a little news story in Michigan. Being in the Midwest here, we talked about they are now, their governor just passed into law a taser legalization. So if you have your CCW license in Michigan and you get some additional training, you can then carry a taser with you, a non-lethal option for those of you who are looking for self-defense but aren't maybe necessarily willing to take someone's life. This less non-lethal version of self-defense tool might be available to you for people in Michigan. So that was a little footnote that I wanted to mention, and I think that as we start growing in podcasts and in listeners, and we should maybe talk about some of the changes in the laws in the nation and whatnot. I know in New Mexico there was a bit of discussion on whether or not New Mexico would grant reciprocity to certain states because they recently changed their standards into reciprocity for New Mexico would only be extended for those who are as strict or substantially as strict.
Yeah, I think
as their training.
We were reading up on it, and it seems like in the last week or so since we found the story, things have even changed a little, and maybe New Mexico backpedaled. Mm-hmm. I can't quite decipher what happened entirely.
The bottom line up front, they kind of, six or seven states were not granted reciprocity, or so the rumor was, but then now I think New Mexico has backpedaled from that stance and is saying that, no, if you still meet these, our requirements for our permits, you'll be fine in our state as well.
Yeah, I think the language in their statute was substantially similar, and they had had a kind of broad reading of that, and then they were tightening it up so that the requirements to carry in the other states' training had to be almost identical to theirs, and that is what led to them dropping some states, and then those states dropped New Mexico, and now, you know, they're going back and forth, but it looks like most of the states are going to be re-added and everything.
Right. As it stands, I think it might be much ado about nothing, because once the other states heard that New Mexico was thinking about doing this, at least the states affected, they said, oh, yeah, you drop us, we'll drop you. And, you know, that's funny thing about how reciprocity works. You know, it's not going to be, well, we'll grant you, but you won't grant us, and we'll be fine with that. No, what they're learning is, you know, these states will say, okay, you won't grant our state residence permits, the reciprocity when they come to your state, then we will do the same to your people in your state. So I'm glad that it was much ado about nothing. I was a little bit concerned that it might be leading to something greater, but I'm glad New Mexico, at least at this point, has seemed to come to their senses and keep the reciprocity as it is. You know.
Yeah, and if we have any listeners in New Mexico that want to shed the light on it, feel free to send us an email or comment on our blog at ccwshow.blogspot.com. The email is ccwpodcast@gmail.com. And I'd also encourage anyone who's been thinking about emailing us or getting in touch with us to do it, because episode 16 is going to be some listener feedback. So
yeah, subject to change, of course. We've been working on a listener feedback episode for a while now, and we're just kind of sifting through all of our favorite emails and emailers and trying to come up with some content for us to share with you guys. And the response so far has been really overwhelming and overwhelmingly positive, which, judging from my lack of knowledge, is incredible. So we're very grateful for that, and as always, constructive criticism is always welcome, and feel free to rate us on iTunes and anything you guys can do to spread the word of CCW Podcast. You know, just please do so, because we definitely are counting on you guys to spread the word. And from what I started from episode 1 to where I'm at now and where we're at now in episode 15 is just a little mind-blowing and humbling. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks to everyone, and don't hesitate to contact us. It really makes our day.
Yeah, email us. We might be the worst emailers in response time, but we read every single one, and we almost get a little shy on how to respond sometimes. And if anything, that's the delay, is we want to give a reply that's deserving of your email. And sometimes it's not something we want to spend 2 minutes on. We want to actually sit down and write a response worthy of some of the emails you guys are sending. So thank you.
Yeah, and I think that'll probably wrap it up.
Okay. Stay tuned.
Semper Pratare.